Herzlich willkommen beim Battlecast, Folge 6 mit Amas 90 und
Moby.
Heute geht's weiter mit unserer CNC Legends Reihe und zu Gast haben wir den Messias himself, den Erlöser, den Retter, den großen Führer der Bruderschaft, Joe Cucane, aka Kane.
Hey, hi, welcome Mr. Cucane and thank you very much for this unique opportunity.
Yeah, nice to meet you guys.
First things first, let's talk about the elephant in the room. How the hell do you maintain such a beautiful, clean skin? You haven't aged a day.
I think my gray beard would betray the fact that I've certainly aged a day or two. My beautiful, clear skin is the dumb luck of genetics, I suppose. I have two beautiful parents, ridiculously beautiful people, who have bequeathed me very good skin. I also, every morning, bathe in the blood of kittens. You know, I collect three or four kittens and then wipe their entrails and blood all over my face. I find that helpful. It keeps me very youthful looking.
That's beautiful.
Oh, nice.
Thank you.
So mostly genetics.
Okay. So let's go far into the past. How did you get into acting and directing?
I was born in Las Vegas, Nevada, and, you know, a number of years ago, there was very little for children to do in Las Vegas. My parents were school teachers, and they realized pretty quickly that, you know, I was going to be pretty bored. There weren't a lot of activities that were sponsored by the city that were geared towards children. It's an adult town, right? Las Vegas is a very adult-oriented town. Mm-hmm. So they were looking in the paper one day, and they found an advertisement for a youth theater with and for children. And I went down and auditioned. I was 10 years old, and I got a role in a play. It was my first show. That led to another play. I became a founding member of a theater company. Back then, at 11 years old, I was one of the founding members of a company called the Rainbow Company. Mm-hmm. Out here in Las Vegas. And it was a theater training program for children, but it cast children in children's roles, which was unusual at the time. But anyway, I just sort of continued to progress as a young actor. And then when I went to college, I majored in theater. But I'd always been directing. I was always more interested in telling people what to do than sort of figuring out what I wanted to do. I had a pretty good eye for the big picture and a sort of sense of what the bigger things wanted to be. When I made the move over to Westwood, it was, I don't think anybody really knew what we were doing. Back in the day, you know, we were just now making the transition over to, you guys may not know what these are. I'm going to use some words that you might not be familiar with. I might have to translate. CD-ROM. And when we were first making that transition from floppy disk to CD-ROM, you know, we had all this new space. So I came on to direct at that point, which is voiceover work. Mm-hmm. And so, we were kind of finding our feet and sort of making it up as we went along. And it was a brave new world. As new to theater, as new as theater was to me when I was a kid, the idea of video games was new to me, you know, as a 30-year-old trying to figure out what the process was going to be. So that's kind of the short story in a long way.
And how did you come to your engagement at Westwood?
Well, like I say, Westwood had been making the transition into adding voice to some of these adventure games that they were doing. And I have a small reputation in town as an actor. Vegas is relatively a pretty small town, just in terms of the community here, at least in the acting and theater community. So I had a small reputation. And I got a phone call from one of the producers looking for a kid, a child, to do the voiceover for one of these adventure games. And because I was running a children's theater at the time. And I said, well, you know, I don't think you really want a child. It sounds like the line load that you're offering is pretty big. And the producer heard my voice on the phone and asked if I would come down and read some things. And I said, well, yeah, that sounds like fun. So I went down and I did a role in one of the adventure games for Westwood. And while, you know, at luncheon and while we were meeting the staff and chatting about theater and story and video games, and I think, you know, I made a big stink about what I thought the future of this genre was going to be. I thought that it was a very unique way to tell story. I thought that it was a very interesting way to treat an audience because you're dealing with a very specific audience of one, you know. Mm-hmm. And I guess I made enough of a stink, and I made enough good points that they saw that the future was going to involve not just, you know, producers and engineers directing voices, but they needed somebody with an artistic mind, an artistic, you know, theater mindset, I guess, to help direct performers. So, you know, I think they were one of the first in the industry to hire someone to just direct the artistic, dramatic assets of production. So they offered me the mm-hmm. gig, and I stepped on, and there I was.
Nice. And how
yeah,
did
10 years.
Yeah. How did your role, the role of Kane, affect your family members?
Affect my family members?
Do you have a son called Seth or something?
No. You know, I was able to pay off my parents' mortgage. I bought both my brothers' horses, and my youngest sister got a Ferrari. So, you know, it affected them mostly in monetary ways. Because I've been trying very hard to buy my family's affection for all these years. They don't care for me very much, obviously. And so I've been doing everything I can to buy myself into their good graces. I don't think they were much affected by it at all. I can say that, you know, my parents have always been very, very supportive of anything that I've chosen to do, whether it was to be involved in theater or to work in video games or to, you know, for a while I was a poker player for a while. I played poker for a living. And my folks were, you know, have always been very supportive and just were morally more concerned that I was happy. Mm-hmm. We're mostly concerned that I would just be happy. I'm grateful for that.
Okay. Which actors or actresses did you love working with the most and why?
Boy, that's a tough question because one of the great things about the industry at that time, I think it probably still, you know, to this day, because it was all so new, the performers that we brought on, you know, for the most part were brand new to video games as well. You know, Michael Biehn had never done a video game before we brought him on for Tiberian Sun. And then I know, you know, James Earl Jones hadn't done, I don't think he'd worked on a green screen before he worked with us over at Westwood. He certainly hadn't done any video games. It was his grandkids were the ones who talked him into doing, you know, Tiberian Sun. I guess his grandkids were Command & Conquer players. So that, you know, that level of enthusiasm from performers is always very contagious and exciting. But I'll say, just in terms of flat-out fun, Kari Wuhr during the Red Alert franchise, Red Alert 1 and Red Alert 2. Yeah, Tanya. The original Tanya in Red Alert 2 and the expansions there. She was just a lot of fun. So very creative, a lot of energy on set. I think we got along very well. I enjoyed her very much. Nick Wirth, who unfortunately passed away a number of 5 years ago, Nicholas Wirth, was a tremendous actor. Ray Wise, again from Red Alert 2, could make anything funny. If you had asked him to read the phone book and please, Ray, could you just bring a little more humor into it? Ray could make anything funny. I think he was a genius. And his, you know, his career was soaring by the time he came to work for us. He was a lot of fun. We didn't have any clunkers. We didn't have any duds out there. I enjoyed really everyone, and I feel very lucky to have worked with the vast amount of talent that I've worked with.
Okay. Besides Command & Conquer, who is your favorite actor or director?
I think in terms of directing, I like Christopher Nolan very much. And, mm-hmm. and even before he you know, made himself famous with Batman, I think the first thing I was aware of him doing was a movie called, I'm blanking right now, Memento. And I just thought that was a brilliant piece of work. And then after that, Seven, I think he did. Did Nolan do Seven? No, Nolan did Seven. Anyway, Nolan's a big fan of Nolan. I like directors that, when you look at their shots, when you look at their scenes, when you see how they treat actors, mm-hmm. you know immediately without having to look at the credits who they are. Mm-hmm. And there are a few that have that ability to really take a scene and give it their own fresh look. I like some of the older school directors as well. David Lynch, I think, falls into that category of a director who you know immediately what his work is just by looking at a frame or two. Cronenberg, we haven't heard much from David Cronenberg lately, but I think he also has a great eye and a great sense of stuff like that. And then, you know, as far as actors go, I like I can't say I have any favorites. I like actors that aren't afraid to take risks, who aren't afraid to really push the envelope of what they think might be acceptable. Gary Oldman comes immediately to mind that. And right now I'm having a huge love affair. I just love it with Sam Rockwell. I think Sam Rockwell is just a genius. I think Rockwell's the best actor working today. I'll go out on a limb and say Rockwell's the best overall actor working today.
Yeah, I think the next question we can skip because you answered it right now.
That's me. I'm always looking ahead, trying to get it done, right? Get the job done.
Okay, so can you give us some glimpses on your road? What have you been doing in the past decades if you haven't been the leader of the terrorist group?
Yes, no, terrorism has been on the decline lately, regardless of what Trump says about Antifa. Terrorism, really, way down. When I left Westwood, I played poker for a little while and screwed around. I started a theater company out here in Las Vegas about 10 years ago. A company called A Public Fit Theater Company, and Las Vegas is really only professional company. We raise a great deal of money so that we can make sure we pay all of our actors. And Vegas hadn't had that before. We have a lot of performing groups. You know, we have the Cirque du Soleil folk and Blue Man and a lot of strip performers, a lot of professional actors. But in terms of just straight theater, we didn't really have that in Las Vegas. I thought that was an important thing to have. So my girlfriend and I, about 8 years ago, founded the Public Fit Theater Company. We produce a 7-show season each year, including 4 stage readings and 3 fully produced works. We try and produce what we call overlooked plays, plays that might not have a chance of seeing production in Las Vegas unless we were going to do it. So we try and stretch ourselves with that work. And of course, for the past, 6 months now, that's been tough. You know, back in March with everyone else, we put our season on. We canceled the remainder of our season. We had two more shows to do. And we thought that we were going to just be in postponement, right? Just postpone these couple shows for a couple of months while everyone sort of found their feet and found their balance in this new world. It hasn't really worked out that way. I don't know that I think we're going to have to face some fundamental questions about what the future of theater really looks like in this new COVID reality, right? Mm. So we've been spending a lot of time deciding, do we move into podcasts? Do we do an alternative version of storytelling? Do we do an immersive type of theater that doesn't involve, an audience of 150 people? Do we try and do shows geared towards, 20, 30 people at a time in social distancing situations? I don't know. So there's been just a lot of talk with the staff. We have a staff of about 12.
So have you come to
how we move forward? I'm sorry.
Have you already come to a solution or an idea or something?
No, we're still pondering. I mean, it's probably the problem is that planning for the future in most any respect out here in America. You guys in Germany got a handle on it pretty quickly because you have competent, intelligent leadership. We are being led by an orange baboon. The president of the United States is an unadulterated moron, just a complete unadulterated moron. I assume that people in Germany know this. I assume we are the laughing stock of the world out there because of him. So when I assume that over the past 4 months, the quarantining and social distancing and what have you would give the government time to come up with a plan and a solution if not a solution, a plan moving forward. No such plan was forthcoming. So it is impossible to plan for the future in any way whatsoever. So we have some ideas of what we'd like to do moving forward. We have some notions of what the possibilities are, but it is impossible to plan in the current climate in the United States. We just don't, I'm sure you guys have read the news. We've had states open up their economies willy-nilly and have to dial that back now as the virus makes a roaring comeback. And so they thought they were planning for the future, and what they were planning for was another series of quarantines and shutdowns. So it's impossible to make decisions now. I wish I had some sort of golden idea of what to do, but I just don't.
Yeah, sure.
Good thing you have an election soon.
Well, you know, fingers crossed. I think that there are no guarantees. I'm not resting on the idea that he will be out.
Yes.
There's a very real possibility he'll win the election, and I'll have to move to Germany. You guys put me up. You have a room. It's very...
we have a coach.
Yeah,
That's not off the table. I actually did look at some I looked at some property in Norway. I looked at some property in St. Lucia, an island out in the Caribbean. I looked at I didn't look at some property. I looked online at the idea of perhaps immigrating to New Zealand. There's a very real chance in the next 4 years that a lot of us will be up and moving away. Fingers crossed. I guess you know where my vote is going.
Fingers crossed, yeah. How does it feel to be such a significant part of the video game history? Is it more of a blessing or of a burden?
Oh, it's a burden. I wake up with this pressure every day. And how can I not embarrass myself and the video game industry today? Because, until recently, I've been my MO is to usually get up in the morning, walk around the downtown area in my boxer shorts, and flip flops, yelling at homeless people, and making a general nuisance of myself. And this is just about shame to the video game community, I think, for the most part. So when the president of the video game community, Larry Peterson, you guys know Larry? No?
Yeah.
Larry Peterson, he's president of the video game community, called me up and said, "Look, Kukan, you're embarrassing us and yourself. Can you just dial it back?" So it's been tough. The quarantine has worked out very well, I got to say, because now for the most part, I'm not allowed really to leave the house. And I'm not convinced. You guys can tell me the truth. Is there really a global pandemic, or is this something that the community just told me to keep me in my house alone?
I haven't seen the
virus yet.
Yeah, well, it's working. I've stayed inside. Look, I've said 100 times, and I'll just say again. I feel like one of the luckiest people in the world. I was in absolutely the right place at absolutely the right time, and was surrounded by the most brilliant people, who allowed me to screw around and be the fuck up jerk that I am, and enabled me to have a lot of fun. So I feel very lucky to be given the opportunity to do all the stuff that I've been able to do. And so I can't for a second pretend it's been anything other than a great blessing. Command & Conquer has the greatest fans. You guys, you wear the hats, for God's sake. You put the emblems on your wall, for crying out loud. I think that's just... this is fantastic. I saw a guy the other day, a Russian, I think, who had a full sleeve shoulder tattoo of my face. That was remarkable.
I have a term for this, a date for this. Start of next year. You come really here, because here I have a captured Titan. Yeah.
Holy
and
cow.
You come here. Yeah.
Please send me a picture when you get that.
Indeed.
Please, I'm begging you. You have my email address. Please send me a picture. I find that remarkable. I can't say it makes me feel comfortable. It feels a little. Just that creates a lot of pressure, right? You know, when someone's going to start tattooing you on their body, there's a certain amount of pressure to create something, right? And to not fuck it up. So yes, I feel that, but I'm mostly grateful. I try and do my best to. I don't know, be a proponent for gamers and gaming and Command & Conquer, certainly. So thank you, and please send me pictures.
So when you're next time in European or in the USA and I see you, you subscribe on it and I can tattoo it also? Yeah?
Absolutely, absolutely. my signature, and I'll put some lipstick on, I'll give a big schmoot, a big kiss, and you can do the lips on there too. How's that?
Nice. Really, really nice.
It might be a little itchy with the beard, but we'll make it.
Yeah, it's no problem, really. I know this. Yeah, I know this. So, Moby, next.
So, how much of Joe Kucan is in the fictional character of Kane?
You know, it's hard to say. I think that I would hate to ascribe a percentage to it. I think that when anyone is acting, even in these sort of broad, exaggerated science fiction roles, right? Roles that are so far-fetched and flung into the future that they almost decry, you know, well, they do decry reality. I don't know that any actor can completely divorce himself from characters. That's why it's hard sometimes to be involved in really, you know, despicable characters, because you put yourself in a despicable mindset. And so after a while of being despicable, you know, that tends to rub off, I think, if you really sort of get into the stuff that you're doing. I think that's one of the reasons why I try and have as much fun as I can whenever I'm offered the opportunity to play Kane. And I try and make it just a little bit bigger and a little bit, I won't say silly, but a little bit tongue-in-cheek. I try and keep a sense of humor with him as much as possible, because if I really think about it, the idea of global terrorism is horrifying. You know, I had a really hard time back in 2001 when the Twin Towers fell. And we as Americans were completely untouched by terrorism. We weren't Ireland. We weren't Syria. We weren't, you know, the Middle East. So or even in some of the major European countries. I mean, you guys don't have any public trash cans for obvious reasons. You know? And I think that, you know, we were untouched for a long time. When that happened, the idea of promoting that mindset in any way whatsoever freaked me out a little bit. And I had to just remind myself that you cannot be responsible for other people's behavior. But I still think that there's a question in my mind about glorifying such things and making them cool or effective in any way. So that was a little bit troublesome. So I try to have as much fun as I can. I try to remind myself that fiction is fiction, and that it is possible to put forward a despicable character with as much humor and tongue-in-cheek enjoyment as possible. So I guess that's my answer. It's a terrible answer, but I'm going to stick with it.
No, it's good. What went through and has gone through your head? Science Remastered was announced and released. What was it like to hear that news?
I'll tell you the absolute truth, Marcel, and this is the truth. I was terrified. I thought that when they were going to remaster it, because, you know, we've had 25 years of gaming since Command and Conquer, and the stuff that's coming out in the past few years is remarkable. Just remarkable in terms of storytelling and acting and production values, right? And I'm, you know, I look back at what are some of my favorite games, like BioShock and the Assassin's Creed series, Black Flag, and games with not necessarily video, well, not even video, but these high quality cutscenes and voice actors, and I was afraid that we were going to really look dated. I was afraid that when they put the remaster out, people would look at it and go, Jesus, this is what we were looking at 25 years ago? And there would be, I was afraid we would look silly, to be honest with you. And I still think in some ways some of that stuff, I mean, we, like I said before, we were making up stuff as we went along. We had small budgets, and we had limited understanding of what the equipment we were using could do, and our compression technology was absolutely brand new. We made our own compression technology. So all that stuff notwithstanding, I think we had obviously a tremendous success, but I was afraid that it was going to look dated and that we would come across looking silly. What I think happened, what I neglected to take into account, was the amount of people that really had a sincere, honest, deep-rooted, nostalgic connection to to the game. I heard from a lot of people. This always touches me. I heard from a lot of gamers who talked about playing Command & Conquer with their dads or with their older brothers, or who discovered the game when they were 10, 11, 12 years old. Because that was, that's who.
I started with five.
Yeah, right? Because that's how old gamers were then. In 95, you didn't have 35-year-olds playing video games. I mean, you did. They were few and far between. That was a generation that was growing up on video games. It's now that we see, 30s, 40s, 50-year-olds playing games because they grew up with them. So I neglected to take into account just the sheer power of that sort of nostalgia and the connection to the game that was something other than just a video game. For a lot of players, and this, I swear to God, this really surprised me. For a lot of players, it was more than a game. It was something that connected them to their families, connected them to their dads, connected them to their brothers, connected them to a small group of friends that would put, home-based lands together to play against each other. And I found that really, really touching. I hadn't really considered that, which is funny because every time I meet a fan, every time I talk to somebody, when I talk to you guys, every time I meet somebody, they're very quick to remind me how young they were when they first became aware of me. I mean, it's kind of a dick move. They tell me, I was so young when I first saw you. I think I was 2, and you look so old. Well, you hardly change at all, but this was 105 years ago. Why are you still alive? That's pretty much their what they're sort of saying. But I'm hearing from a lot of fans who just remind me how young they were when they discovered the game.
Yeah,
does that answer your question? Sometimes I just talk and I just keep talking.
We have. Okay. I think now we have a surprise for you, or Moby tell this.
I'll take a surprise.
Well, the first question, Anders 3, did you steal the nut ring?
I'm sorry?
Did you steal the nut ring?
No, I didn't steal a nut ring! I did not steal a nut ring. They gave me a nut ring, so I have a nut ring, but I didn't steal the nut ring. I have a plan, though. I had a plan to steal the nut ring. I was going to steal the nut ring. I was going to do it. I had a plan. I was going to distract some of the producers with a well-placed water balloon, I was going to knock over the craft services cart while everyone was busy cleaning up. I was going to run away at the nod ring. Before I could steal the nod ring, somebody else fucking stole the nod ring. So.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
As we're approaching the end of this interview, we have planned a big event for the broadcast of this interview. With the whole community. We wanted to officially invite you to be part of this event celebrating 25 years of Command & Conquer. Oh. And to celebrate this with our community, we have asked some representatives, like Twitch streamers, content creators, and so on, to ask questions to the leader of NOT.
when would this happen?
We don't know yet. Okay. But we already asked for their questions, and we have them here for you now.
Oh,
I can write you the date. I think in about 2-3-4 weeks, because we also asked Jim Fasella and Frank Lepecki and some petroglyph devs that also joined this event, and yeah. I will write you an email when we start this.
Okay, I'll do my best. My schedule is relatively clear, but there's all this stuff going on. Like I said, it's nearly impossible for me to plan anything in the future. Because each passing day brings new challenges and new changes,
yes,
right?
Indeed.
So I have some family issues and some commitments, but I'd love to. That'd be a lot of fun. I always enjoy meeting and talking with fans and hearing the stories of what the game means to them. It always affects me.
Yeah, that'd be great. So let's start with this block. The Hateful Bait asks, I think you're a very funny person, especially if you look at past interviews. Have you ever considered doing something in comedy?
Well, no, I haven't. The amount of talent and commitment that it takes to do comedy, I respect it too much to violate it with my ridiculous shenanigans. I think that, I think there's so much work that goes into putting together routines and writing. It's really not my, I'm just irreverent. I think when people say I'm funny, it's just because I'm irreverent and I don't care too much about anything really. So it's I think okay. It's just lucky.
Oh. Yeah. Bike Rush asks, where do you think your career would be if you have never landed the CNC job?
If I had never landed the CNC job, I think I would probably, I think I'd still be teaching theater for, I was working for a company in Las Vegas, a theater training company. I had been there for 10 years already. I think I'd probably have stayed with that gig and have been retired by now. My God, have you retired and living in a shining house on a hill with nothing but manservants and a large plantation. Yeah, that'd be probably. CNC is okay. The end of my life.
Yeah. So, Yap Yahoo asks, Messias or Madman, what was your inspiration for the character of Kane, which splits the player base to either admire or despise him?
I don't know that I had the inspiration. I think that you present your best, sort of present your best ideas, you present your best work, and then you trust the audience is going to see something. It's true in theater too, right? The audience is always going to come up with an interpretation because they're going to expect that you put in some sort of work. So the audience will always, always chime in with their understanding of what the characters are about. So, you know, love me or hate me, I don't know. That's one of the fun things about CNC is that there's there are players that will play Nod only because they, you know, want to screw me up as best they can, or players will play GDI just because they want to kill me or what have you. I think that you just present your best work and trust that the audience is going to come up with an interpretation. I can't possibly make everyone feel exactly the same way. It's just not possible.
Yeah, thank okay. you. So Printed Armies asks, if you were in charge of writing a sequel or prequel to the Command Conquer franchise, which parts or elements of the character Kane would you like to explore? And do you think there are stories about him that haven't been told yet?
Oh yeah, no, I do. I think an origin story would be a lot of fun. That sort of thing being very popular these days. I think it'd be a fun idea to get a better sense of where the character actually came from and what drove Kane to plan out, you know, generations and generations and generations of a life to create the world that he has created. I think there's a lot of interesting stories in that. So if I had my way, I would choose it. I think I would do an origin story.
Okay.
Nice. Stony the Walk asks, you don't seem to have aged at all since 1995's Tiberian Dawn. Where are you hiding the Fountain of Yoth, or you use Tiberium in the morning?
No, like I said, I have a picture of myself somewhere that just gets older and older and older. and I stay the same. No, you know, I look at some of those old pictures, and you know, aside from the graying of the beard, I think I've done all right. This is what comes from just not really having worked a single day in my life for the past 50 years of just being completely idle, an idle stay-at-home kind of guy who, I hire young women to come over and just rub me with lotion.
Normal.
For 3 hours at a time each day. And that seems to help as well.
Okay, nice. Kano Mensa asks, a big part of the community don't see CNC4 as a proper sequel in the Tiberian series, and it shouldn't be canon. What are your thoughts on this?
I don't remember CNC4. Is there a CNC?
No, I don't recall. Actually not.
I never found it.
I wish I could answer that question. I just don't. I have no. I just.
It must be a mistake. Sorry.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry. It's our fault. Yeah, it's our fault.
Yeah, you guys are making shit up now. I thought I was the one who was the liar, but I don't remember.
So the last questions. DK476 asks, if the Tiberium universe were to make a new game, no remastered, how would you go about that, and on what scale would it be?
Well, I think you're foolish if you ignore the online aspect of the game. I think the a continuing growing world where you could literally amass a larger and larger army and choose how you would be a part of that army, as a what sort of commander you would be, and how you could combine forces. I think it'd be really interesting, and for me, I always thought it would be fun to take Command and Conquer off world, so that it became not just an Earth conquering game, but a sort of planetary conquering game where you could achieve a home planet that you would have to conquer first to be your own, and then sort of branch off and do battle against other planets, using Tiberian as a sort of spike to terraform the planet for your own arrival. So that was.
Sounds like a
vague
nice
idea, but I have to remind everybody: I'm not a designer. I'm not a game designer, or much of a developer at all. I'm just a storyteller, and so those sorts of stories I would find interesting. Would it be a good game? I don't know. I'm a terrible judge of game theory and what goes into game design. Those are questions for Jim. Vasala is the genius when it comes to stuff like that. You know, okay. A real strong game producer, not me.
Okay. CNC Zaga asks, what were your first thoughts when you asked to play the role, and especially this role in a computer game which would make you become immortal? And what made you agree to become the ultimate charismatic leader, Kane?
Well, I don't know that anything was going through my head other than this was my job at the time. And it never, if I could see the future, if I could have seen the future, I might have taken it a lot more seriously. I really thought we were going to you know, put this game out. We would sell, you know, 20,000-25,000 units maybe, and call it a day, and then move on to producing another, you know, Lands of Lore game or Monopoly or something. And so the idea of games franchising and becoming brands in and of themselves was so new. I mean, you know, the only experience I'd really had were games like were adventure games, you know, Police Quest 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, and mm-hmm. you know, Westwood had done the Carandi series, things like that. Myst had just recently come out back then, I think in 93 or 94. No, it was earlier than that. 90. Anyway, so the idea of something evolving into this vast franchise, I couldn't imagine. I didn't have that sort of vision. I still don't. I'm not particularly visionary. So
what was your one
proposal? Yeah, well, that's what they say. That's what they give me. They, you know, they give me those lines to say. I didn't make that shit up. They tell me to say that stuff. So it never occurred to me that 25 years later I would be talking to people about decisions that were made in a corner office in Westwood Studios, in our second office. Before we moved to the big studio, and we were filming demo shots behind somebody's desk, you know, some designer's desk, and we thought, well, that looks good. Let's do that. Okay, we'll do that. I'll write something about that. To think that 25 years later we'd still be talking about it, it never occurred to me. Yeah. I'm still flabbergasted.
Amazing, yeah, yeah.
It is amazing.
ZX Gannon asks, are you aware of the many fan mods based on Command & Conquer, like OpenRA, and what do you think about the CNC community in general and its passion?
I love the passion of the CNC community. I like I say, the best fans in the world. I can't say that I'm that in tune to the modding community and what they've done. I've heard stories, I've heard tell of what they've done, but I haven't seen it firsthand. Because I'm not very good at Command and Conquer. So in playing the game, I'm terrible. So I get frustrated and I don't spend a lot of time actually playing. You know, I play once in a while, but nothing on the scale of these geniuses. Because it's really real-time chess, isn't it? It's real-time, fast chess game. And I'm not smart enough. I'm not smart enough to be a Command and Conquer fan. I'm not smart enough to be a Command and Conquer player. I might be smart enough to be a Command and Conquer goofball, you know, put me behind the scenes where I belong, but I'm just not smart enough to be a player. So I don't know much about the modding community. I love that it exists, though. I love that they have taken not just the game, but the lore of the game and sort of written in answers to questions that that they want answered. You know, created their own universe, created their own ideals. I think that's really. It's a testament to the enduring nature of the game, right? That people are still doing that for all these years. I love it.
Okay, and as a final question of our community, we have chosen the question on Facebook with the most likes, and that comes from Bobby Boys. How much of the character King was your own improvisation? Oh, we almost had that.
You know, I remember, I probably remember this wrong because it was 25 years ago, but we had writers that would put words in King's mouth. And as I recall, I rewrote a lot of that stuff. And I rewrote a lot of that stuff because it didn't feel unique enough to me. It felt a little like standard sci-fi villain gobbledygook. So I think that they're that's not fair. That's not even fair. It was brand new, right? We had writers who we had hired who had done movies and TV shows. Nobody was writing video game dialogue. Nobody was writing, you know, character trees and these sort of monologues. So we were all discovering it all at the same time. So it was really a collaborative effort. Now I really have to look back and think that words would come in and we'd decide what sort of direction we wanted to go in. Nothing was improvised. Nothing on set was sort of, you know, improvised in front of the camera. But I always took a lot of liberty as a director and as an actor to try and give Kane a very unique voice. I think that specific cadence and rhythm of his language is important. And I think it comes from, honestly, I think it comes from theater and listening to a lot of radio. This is going to sound like a very strange thing. If you listen to news broadcasts on the radio, BBC or NPR, they're completely different from news broadcasts on television, right? Because on television, they talk in these little quick bites where sentences are short. On radio, they can go a little bit longer and there are more commas in the sentences, right? Mm-hmm. So they'll speak and speak and speak, comma, comma. And then today, so-and-so would be far, blah, blah, blah. And they're longer. That always appealed to me, those longer sentences. So if I could, with Keane, I tried to combine sentences and stretch them out and add more commas and make them longer so that he seemed to be waxing poetic more. Yeah. But nothing was ever really improvised. Nothing was sort of made up on the spot other than perhaps a word or change here. Mm-hmm. And that's the truth. And I have to say, I have spent most of this interview telling the truth, which I find really distracting. I don't...
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm off my game. I'm off my game today.
Yeah, so we do our job well. My last question. Would you be willing to reprise the role of Kane again if Petroglyph and or EA ask, and if not a game, but some other media like a TV series or a movie?
A musical, maybe.
Maybe, yeah.
Maybe. Of course I would. I think one of the, I'm an actor. Director, that's what I do for a living. So, you know, I would. There is nothing to lose, and only, you know, the world to gain by continuing. I think that I would be surprised if that happened. I would be surprised if I were brought back into the universe in any way whatsoever. But I would welcome it because I think that it's. I just have so much fun. Whenever I do those projects, I get to work with really, really talented, really, really smart people, and I get to ham it up. I get to really, really ham it up and emote and be bigger than life. And it's a different style of acting. And it's a style of acting that I really enjoy. So I would very happily step back into that role.
Okay, thank you very much. Do you have any last words to your loyal followers?
I just, thanks again. I thank you for continuing to appreciate and enjoy the game. I hope that that doesn't end. I hope that we can look back in another 25 years at this interview and laugh again about how we're still talking about this project. I hope that I'd love to see the mods continue to evolve the game into something that I can't even imagine or think about yet.
Maybe we still talk about your skin.
In another 25 years, I hope we're still talking about my skin.
Maybe.
Thanks, guys. I really appreciate the time.
Yeah,
this is a lot of fun.
Thank you very much.
Thanks
nice to meet you. Marcel, nice to meet you. And Moby, nice to almost meet you. I can't see you.
Sorry.
Thanks, fellas. So,
yeah. Thanks.
All right, I'll sign off now.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Freude durch Machen.